Extremely bright. Is that obnoxious? Don't know where I'm going to go with this thought. Good evening, I'm Bill Campbell and welcome to Straight Talk, the program produced about students. Tonight we're coming to you from Cordova, Alaska, which is down southeast of Valdez, Alaska and south central. Myself and Dave Breen, the engineer, came on down to talk to somebody from Cordova about the effects of the oil spill, and more so on the effects of oil spill in directly to the younger people here in town. And joining me, I have Dana, who's a 20-year-old resident here in Cordova. And
that's correct.
How long have you lived in Cordova?
3 years.
Where'd you live before that?
I came from Quilcene, Washington, and came to Alaska as a commercial fisherman, and it's what I do to this day.
What about, now the oil spill this summer, obviously, tell me a little bit about Cordova before we get started. Is it primary a fishing town?
Just about 100% fishing town. You know, the companies that the fishermen need to fish, grocery stores, stuff like that.
Now, in comparison to someplace like, say, Valdez, is that more an oil town in comparison?
Valdez is well, it's an oil town. It's got tourism and a little bit of fishing.
Mm-hmm. What did, before the oil spill, obviously fishing is a big industry here. Is that what everybody does, high school students, college students, when they come home for the summers? Is it primarily fishing for them to work?
Yeah, they fish. A lot of kids that come home for the summer, they've gone to school down south all winter. They come back up, and they fish with their uncle or their father or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What about, do people come from outside and fish here in Cordova?
Oh, yeah, many, many people.
What was Cordova like before the oil spill? Did it grow at all population-wise because of the oil spill?
If anything, it's decreased. Now that the summer's over, a lot of the local people have moved. A lot of people to Arizona, a lot of people to Willow. They lived here a long time. It was just too much to take. They just got tired of the greed and stuff and left.
In part because of the oil spill?
The greed came with the oil spill.
Really? How so? In what ways? What forms? Obviously,
well,
the incentive.
Fishermen, not to say fishermen aren't greedy, but all of a sudden you could be paid quite a bit of money just to lease your boat out and let it sit there, basically doing nothing for extremely large amounts of money and basically being bought off. And so,
what I heard, now living in Fairbanks, I really wasn't directly affected by the oil spill. We heard unbelievable amounts of like $2,000 a day. People are getting paid for boats, is that?
Oh, yeah, and more.
And then some?
Yeah.
When you talk about greed, was there, obviously the people wanted to make money. But isn't fishing kind of that way? I mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
You make money on the days you can and.
Yeah, but it's different. You're working for your money. Everybody knows before the season who has permits, who doesn't, And it's a lot of skill and stuff involved, too.
Mm-hmm. How long is the fishing season here in Cordova normally?
It's the same season's 6 to 8 weeks, and then the gillnet season's all year long.
Mm-hmm. Like right now, it's in January here, and the ocean's open, there's some snow, but all in all, it's, 40 degrees, 45 degrees out. Is there any fishing going on right now?
A few small boats, 30-footers are out, playing at dungey crabbing, and then a couple boats are long lining for, ground fish, yellow eye and such, but mostly no.
All in all, it's a summertime.
Yeah, it's summertime.
And what about the oil spill? I mean, that happened right before your season opened?
Yeah, that was right before herring.
How did people react? What?
Well, it was a real shock. Everybody's gearing up. They're getting ready to go out pounding and stuff, and then all of a sudden it's closed. It's not going to happen, and it was a real shock.
What did what about for yourself? I know you don't own a boat, but you were planning on working on the boat.
Actually, I was working out at Extra Hatchery. It's a salmon hatchery, and at first it wasn't real. I was still sitting there tagging fish. It wasn't real, and then I came back to town, and the whole town. When herring comes in, it's like the town doubles or even quadruples in population. But it was like all of that and more. It was just incredible.
Just that big an influx?
Just, yeah. People that came into town, and I didn't know anybody. Everybody I knew was out on their boats cleaning up oil or doing hatchery assist or stuff like that.
Why did people come to Cordova? Why here? Were the oil companies hiring people to clean out of Cordova?
Well, people were more going to Valdez. You can drive there and stuff. But, it's, if you got enough money to go someplace else, you can stand in a shorter line. That's about why they came here.
What did the town people, I mean, this is probably, for instance, what did the adults, you know, people who own the fishing boats, how did they react?
A lot of them tried to get contracts. They went, you know, we're not going to be fishing this year. It looks like they're going to close us down completely. Let's try and get a contract. Well, do what we can to help clean up the spill, you know, and earn some money while we're at it. And then some people went, well, you know, they were still down south. They hadn't come up yet. They just stayed there.
Mm-hmm. When you talked about closing us down, the fishermen, did they close off certain? I mean, was there still fishing going on?
I'm talking about before we knew what they were going to close and what they weren't. They knew that, well, they closed herring, and well, maybe they're going to close salmon, maybe they're not.
Mm-hmm.
For the sound.
Right. So did people? I mean, right away. Well, I guess what I'm questioning, and what about for the students' point? I mean, from the younger people's point of view who are working.
Well, then it's real shaky. Maybe instead of hiring you as your 19, 20-year-old, he's going to hire his 7-year-old son instead. You might have just lost your job to a kid that can't do the job, or maybe his grandpa who's 90 years old and really can't fish anymore. He's too old, but he can go and he knows how to tie knots and he's there and he can tend to boom just fine.
Mm-hmm. For fishing. Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of the way? Is fishing that way, though? Is it real competitive to get on a boat? And
yeah, fishing is real competitive. I've had a really hard time getting on a boat in Cordova.
Is it just because you haven't lived here very long?
Well, it's real tight. For seiners, they're looking for a big, strong guy, and at 5'4", I don't cut it.
Mm-hmm. Before the oil spill, Cordova, it seems like a friendly town right now, too. Now, perhaps it's because right now it's kind of small with winter, and it seems like a lot of the cafes and things, when we were looking for lunch, a lot of the cafes are closed, people are on vacation. But everyone seemed real friendly on the street, you know, as far as...
Yeah, that's how Cordova's always been.
Was that way... I mean, is it as friendly now after the oil spill and the influx of people as it was before the oil spill? I mean,
now that the summer's passed, it's the oil spill's still here, but it's over. It's old news, so to speak. It's back to being a friendly town. Back to knowing people.
How was it during the oil spill?
Oh, it was crazy. You talked to, well, it's a couple months into the cleaning. You talk to people that were, you know, normally pretty chipper people, and they were just all depressed and sad, and you could never get away from it. Everybody was just, you know, depressed and stuff.
When you say depressed, were they depressed because they weren't fishing or making money there? Were they depressed because of the people in the town?
A lot of it was that... It's such a big impact on your life, and it was really hard to tell how long that impact was going to be, whether that was going to be forever that we'd lost the sound, or if it was just one summer.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, you said just a few minutes ago some of the effect of last year, and assuming it's going to happen, you know, continue this year. I don't know whether the oil spill is going to be, the cleanup is going to be as big as it was last year. Is there still a problem with fishing around here? Is there still oil on the beaches and whatnot?
There's a night naked, there's still oil out there. But you know, on the eastern side of the sound, our side of the sound, it was never here. It was never a problem.
Mm-hmm. What about fishing for the summer? How does it look like people are going to be working cleanup again this coming summer? Or is it going to be fishing?
Yeah, it's not for sure yet. I have no way to know. But you know, through the grapevine, herring's going to be open for pounding and possibly for seining.
Pounding, sanding, what is this? You're talking to a kid here who, and I halibut fish once a year, and if I'm lucky. What's that?
Seining is well, you purse seine the herring and you kill them and send them to Japan, and they take the roe out, and then some of it goes for bait for halibut. Not too many people eat herring, but some of it goes for food. And then for pounding, it's a live fish fishery. You seine the herring, but you never take them out of the water, and you put them in a pen with pre-picked kelp, and then the herring spawn on the kelp. You take the kelp out. It's a premium product. It's premium kelp, and you sell it to the Japanese, and they eat the stuff.
Mm-hmm. How did because like you mentioned, a lot of the fish, a lot of the herring things does go overseas to Japan out of Alaska here. Uh-huh. And that's part of being a Pacific Rim country. But how did they react? I mean, here, one of their prime sources for herring is all of a sudden there's no herring fishing because of the oil spill. Is there fear of losing the Japan account next year?
No. I don't really study this kind of stuff. I believe that it was a surplus of herring from the year before, because just before their holiday happened, when they eat all the herring roe, an important guy had died, so they weren't celebrating, so they had lots of herring roe left over. And then this isn't the only herring fishery. There's Southeast, Norton Sound, Kodiak.
What about here, again, you were talking a moment ago about Cordova and how friendly a town it is. Things here didn't seem, you know, terribly expensive. Now, were they? Did the price of food and?
I learned as soon as I moved to this town to not be shocked, no matter what they tell you, what your little bag of groceries is worth when you get to the checkout counter. But things went up like outboards went up a couple $100, and they stayed up. I know that. I just bought a 15 horse. things went up a little bit, but I think pretty much either we've gotten used to it or they've come back down.
Mm-hmm. Were people, because there's a lot of people here who, you know, while it's primarily a fishing town, there's a lot of people who own, you know, little hotels and whatnot, which obviously were filled. Was everybody, I guess it's tough. I mean, I'm asking you again just for your opinion. I don't expect you to be a economic whiz, but was everybody affected? I mean, did everybody, their salaries increase to where they could afford the higher prices, or did that really hurt some people financially?
Well, actually, some good things came out of it. As far as salaries go, a lot of the Filipinos who have traditionally worked in the canneries moved into the community into higher paying jobs that were paying higher yet because they couldn't get anybody. And that was real good that way. The Filipinos are still working in the community and stuff. But the salaries have gone basically back to where they were. Mm-hmm. Hotel rooms at that time were outrageous, and now they've gotten back to their usual $80 a night.
How outrageous? What are we talking outrageous here?
Well, to stay in the Alaskan, which is, I'll be polite, not the fanciest place in town, was, I believe, $60 a person. I never stayed there. I don't know for sure.
Right.
And the rooms are really small.
A lot of stories came from, you know, again, during the oil spill, they came up to Fairbanks of people who would rent houses. And they'd, you know, have 15, 20 guys living in the house for a reason, because during the oil spill, when you went out to clean, weren't you out on the boat for sometimes like 48 hours at a time? You'd go out for 2 or 3 days and come back for a day, or did they?
I never worked on a cleanup boat, but my friends who did stayed out. I work with an air taxi a little bit, and we brought in people that hadn't seen, you know, hadn't touched foot on ground basically for, you know, a couple months.
They'd been out there working the whole time.
Yeah.
What did, now...
I'm talking about the skippers when I say they never touched their foot on the ground.
Mm-hmm. What about people, like, for instance, high school students here? Is it, I mean, obviously they work fish in the summer. They all fish in the summer, so it's common to be unemployed in the winter for them. I mean, they're students, that's, you know, you work the summer and you fish. What about other people who came here? For instance, you said some Filipinos who normally work in the canneries moved here. So they work the summer.
They already moved here. They move in and they stay year-round, but they work the summers at the canneries.
What do they do in the winter?
Well, I'm not really sure. They save up their money and they're all ages. Some of them go to school. Some of them take care of kids. Some of them,
so it's strictly seasonal work. That's what they're used to. Because I remember thinking myself and hearing, boy, you know, that's going to be tough after the oil spill cleanup's over. What are people going to do for work? But it's kind of a seasonal community anyway.
Yeah, it's a real, real seasonal community. And there's actually quite a few jobs open. I'm not working, but if I wanted to, I could.
Uh-huh. What about... you and I walked up the street here. You were pointing out some things in town, and I asked you about police officers we saw and passed by, and I kind of said, how many? Thinking you'd say one or two, because Cordova's not a very big town. What is it, a couple thousand people in the winter?
Mm-hmm.
And you said there were 7 police officers here in town?
That's correct.
Is that because in the summertime do things get a little rowdy here in town because of the influx of people?
I'm not really sure. A lot of it is they're trying to kick the drugs in this town before they come in or as they come in, an interception kind of thing, and they don't want this to become a drug haven, and then a lot of it is in the summertime we do get a lot of people siphoning gas out of cars and stuff like that that's really unnecessary, and they're trying to keep a handle on that.
Is that and in the wintertime, is it a real honest slowdown, and people become a lot more, I don't want to say honest, more honest in the summer, but people who are dishonest and who siphon gas, they all leave in the...
I don't know. I think a lot of it is when there's not very many people, if you've got maybe 100 people that might be stealing cars and siphoning gas, it's a lot easier to catch them.
Yeah, and then in the summertime. What about before the oil spill ever happened? Was there a drug problem here in town? Obviously, this is, again, an opinionated question. You know, your opinion. I don't expect you to be an expert.
I don't really know that there's a drug problem now, but that's just me being oblivious, or maybe it's not here. I don't know.
Tough question to call. You are only 20 years old. But you were talking about a friend who you were talking to who had a couple of children, and you said that her husband was working on the oil spill. How did that, you know, work when you got children, young children? You said she had a 1-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, if I'm correct.
Backwards. 1-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son.
Oh, I was close. What did that do? I mean, obviously that was difficult, having a husband who's out on the boat for a month and a half and at a time.
Well, basically he'd be out there anyway. Actually, come to think of it, the baby's not a year old. It was born this spring. He was out on the boat. It was, she got kind of mad a couple times. He was never there, never around, never take care of it'd be real handy if there was somebody there to take care of the boy at night so she's got her baby and stuff, but, he's just not there. She's got other relatives and stuff. It was okay. Most of them were working, too, but different shifts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Kind of tough on families, huh?
Yeah, kind of tough on families, but they got the whole winter to normalize.
And get ready for another child in the spring, huh? I don't mean to embarrass you with this question here, but a 20-year-old single female, what about, you got all the guys influxing into town here. How was that? Not necessarily you personally. I don't want to put you on the spot.
Well, I've got a boyfriend that I've lived with for the last, 3 years. And so I don't know if I really qualify to have noticed that too much, but...
Let's hope he's not listening, huh?
Let's hope he's not listening. The male-to-female ratio in this town has always been a little off, so...
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bigger this year. I think that's about all.
Cordova, we're here... we came in KCHU, which is one the public radio station for Valdez and Cordova in this area. We're using their studio to record this in. But Cordova is really in the limelight. I mean, next to Valdez, because that's where the ship originated, Cordova is really in the limelight. What about all the reporters coming to town and all the media coverage?
There was a couple instances that were so bad that they hurt, and then sometimes they were so bad that you just had to laugh.
We had
one gal come into Tetitlik, which is halfway in between here in Valdez, roughly, and she decided that it was this little native community and she already knew what she wanted pictures of, and she wanted pictures of all these people going down to their Russian Orthodox church, and that's what she got. And if people would come in and not know what they wanted pictures of before they got here, I mean, it might have gotten a lot more accurate picture. And there was another article in Money Magazine, which I don't subscribe to, but my neighbor got a copy off of the jet when he was traveling. And it was this lady had said that the oil sheen looked pretty on the water in this article in Money Magazine. It was just hurt.
What?
Unreal.
Did you obviously saw some of the articles. All in all, how realistic and how true were the reporting coming out of here?
Well, it was about half and half. It depended on which newspapers and which radio stations and which TV stations that you watch, whether you got a totally inaccurate picture or this, you know, this glossed over thing, or an almost realistic picture of what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. What about as far as blame for the oil spill? Obviously, the media really fixated on the captain of the Exxon Valdez, and mm-hmm. and the attention really, the blame really seemed to go, you know, right directly onto Exxon. Did people hear? Did you kind of, was it, obviously the blame was on the captain, you know, he made a mistake and hit the reef, there's no question about that, but was that kind
of, actually, he wasn't even in the wheelhouse, from
right.
what I've heard, so the blame should be on the third mate. And then there was another thing that I wondered, it was a month and a half before I heard, where's the first and second mate? Well, they were down sleeping because they had the next shift, but nobody ever said where the first and second mate were.
Well, and see, that's what's coming up to trial, but I guess what I'm trying to ask is, when people here in Cordova heard about the oil spill, did they say, well, it was bound to happen? It was just bound, or did they say,
well,
I can't believe it?
Basically, after the shock wore off, it was kind of, well, you know, everybody said that this could happen, and that you said it couldn't. So it was kind of, well, we told you so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
What about the new plan now? To take care of, you know, if something like that should happen again, having to have the tugboats escort the boats, the ships out and things. Do you think it's adequate?
No, it's not adequate.
Why?
Once again, it's a lot of stuff on paper, and when it comes right down to it, they still don't know how to clean the oil up. They don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we can do a lot of preventative measures, and we can do a lot more than we're doing, and that's great, and I'm 100% for that. But we should know how to clean the oil up before there's any chance whatsoever that it'll spill.
Good point. Well, thank you very much. I know I have a question I wanted to ask in the last couple of minutes. Is it always, when we came here this afternoon, Dave, the engineer, Dave Breen, and myself showed up and popped the door open of the airplane, jumped out, and it was 40 degrees out. And we were in shock because it was so warm. Is that is this tradition down here? Is it always this warm?
There's no such thing as a normal Cordova winter. That just doesn't exist. Anything above 50 degrees would be really, really strange. Anything below 20 below would be really strange. And a temperature change of more than 30 degrees in a week's time would be kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
I ask that because people in Fairbanks, well, they're listening to the show. It's 20 below at the moment and bitter cold when we left. So well, it's awfully pretty down here. And thank you very much for coming in on short notice and talking about this. I know we didn't give you a whole lot of lead time here.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially want to thank Ellen Locklear, who takes care of all the reporting out of the Cordova station here and sends it back to Valdez to the KCHU station. Ellen and Amy Barnett, who's the program director at KCHU and Valdez, put this all together. I called down and simply said, I'm hoping to come down, and they found you and got you to come in. I appreciate it, especially seeing how it took us a couple of tries to get down here because of the volcano and whatnot. So, again, okay. Thank you very much. Well, good luck this summer.
And good luck to you.
We appreciate it. And that's all for tonight, coming out of Cordova on tape-delayed basis. So until next Wednesday night, I'm Bill Campbell. Good night.